Welcome to episode 105 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on December 21, 2018. This is a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life, where we discuss the topic or recent news related to Office 365 or Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. In this episode, Scott and Ben dive into some recent Azure news and discuss the new Azure PowerShell AZ module, updates to the Azure AD endpoints, and Azure Backup for VMs and Azure running SQL.
Good morning, Scott. Merry Christmas, almost. It's
almost. Yes.
What, four more days till Christmas? Three more? Four. I think it's four.
It's going to be just a few, but it's going to be okay. You know, we'll all make it and we'll all survive.
Yes, because we're getting Christmas presents from Microsoft?
No. Well, you're going to get a Christmas present from me, but because I am not a smart person, I did not order your Christmas present in time. So it is going to be a belated Christmas present, but it is coming.
Oh, you think?
Yes.
Does that mean I was supposed to order you a Christmas present?
No. Actually, I ordered myself a Christmas present at the same time. So I'm just going to say that it's from you.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
Yeah.
Sounds good. That's how you get out of getting in trouble with your wife, isn't it? As you just tell her, oh no, Ben got this for me. It was his Christmas present. Now I
see. Yeah.
I can never figure out why your wife didn't like me. It's because you blame it all on me.
It's all going to work out okay. She actually saw me ordering it. And when I was ordering it, she said that she liked it so much that I should get one for myself. So it was wife approved. It meant, you know, it had passed the wife acceptance factor. The WAF was in place and I proceeded with it.
Perfect. Sounds good. So aside from Christmas presents, we do have some news we can talk about today. Should we dive into some news, even though it's getting close to the end of the year? And I think, doesn't Microsoft lock down like any changes at a certain point in time? And I think they used to. I don't know if they do anymore. But I feel like there's been a...
I think you're thinking of Apple when they shut down the App Store for a couple of days.
Maybe that's it.
But Microsoft locks things down in the sense that people go on vacation. AWS does as well. Google does the same thing. You know, we've all got families, holidays, things like that. And sometimes you've got use it or lose it. Vacation time and hours built up. So there are just things that need to be done.
Yes. Well, and there, I feel like there's actually been a bunch of updates in the last month or so. A bunch of new things coming both in Azure land and Office 365 land.
Yes. Lots of teams are laying the groundwork for next year. And there's some things that happen, like as we talk about maybe Microsoft stuff, they're getting ready for ready. You know, they have a big internal tech conference every year. Think about it as Ignite, but just for Microsoft employees. And that one kind of has a couple of components and things, but you know, the product teams come out, product group comes out, product marketing comes out, and they talk to the rest of Microsoft, whether that's field or consulting or product, just all over the place. So as they get ready for that and they try and figure out messaging and fit and where they want to be over the course of not just preparing for ready, but over the course of the next year, right? And they start to execute on those plans. They've got to put a couple prerequisites in place. So all sorts of fun stuff.
All right. Sounds good. So do you want to go first with some news you have, or do you want me to go first with news I have?
I want to go first just because you were so excited about all the stuff that you had going on.
I was. I have all kinds of stuff I'm just going to bring up just because I want to see your reaction.
Wonderful. If you talk about Yammer and I hang up the phone call, it's on you. You've been warned.
Yammer.
I know. And I know you're going to talk about it. So we'll see where it goes. So yeah, let's get started with Azure and PowerShell. So I know you're a big fan of PowerShell and automation, and I am as well. And I know you're out there running around on a Mac, which can have some downsides when you're using Microsoft PowerShell commandlets sometimes, because they've been built with dependencies on things like the .NET framework. And they're not exactly cross-platform. So while there's stuff in PowerShell that you can run on a Mac, when it comes to like Azure and Office 365 and workloads like that, not everything works. And then that can be a little bit disappointing sometimes.
Yeah, although not everything is a bit generous. I would say most things don't work.
It depends on where you're going and, okay, and what's happening.
That could be true. Office 365 and SharePoint stuff don't work yet.
Correct. Yeah, you should use the CLI. It's NPM's way better for that.
Yes.
But in official Azure PowerShell land, what they're doing there is they're, and they've been very clear in messaging here, that the current commandlet set for interacting with the Azure Resource Manager APIs, the ARM APIs, is going to go away, and it's going to be replaced with a new set of modules that are just AZ. So everything that is Azure RM today has that in its naming standard. Those are all just going to become AZ commandlets. So those are still going to be just for interacting with the resource manager APIs. Nothing kind of changes along the way for that one. But what does change is in this transition to AZ, it is a set of commandlets that have been built to work with .NET Core and with PowerShell Core. So that means that they can run with feature compatibility on Windows, Linux, and macOS. So there's been a little bit of groundwork that's been laid here by Microsoft. They've gone out and done things like the Cloud Shell, which we've talked about in the past, the Azure Cloud Shell.
Yep.
That little container instance, the PowerShell container instance, was switched from PowerShell Windows to PowerShell Linux a couple months ago. And since that runs on Linux, they've been bootstrapping a bunch of this stuff in there. So you can actually use and have been able to use the AZ commandlet set over there. And then switch to Azure RM as you need to within your session. And as they've gotten ready to do this and push these things out, they have officially announced version 1.0 of the AZ module. So version 1.0 runs in both PowerShell 5.1 and PowerShell Core. So it is cross-platform. It has been updated in the Cloud Shell. So always ready to go. It has some downstream impacts to customers who are already using the Azure RM commandlets or any of the functionality that comes out of there, because the noun prefix has changed. It's no longer going to be Azure RM. It is going to be just AZ. So everything will be a little bit simpler and kind of ready to go. So as part of this announcement, Microsoft has released a migration guide, which gives you kind of hopefully clear guidance on what to do if you have scripts that are currently written using the existing Azure RM commandlet sets. So, at a high level, you'll be able to, or you can, convert your existing scripts if there's compatibility there along the way. You can actually keep both commandlet sets around. You just have to run them in different sessions. So you can't run the AZ commandlets and the Azure RM commandlets in the same session, but you can absolutely have them installed side by side and do what you need to do and fire things up along the way. So pretty easy to do that one. You can also go ahead and just install AZ in PowerShell Core, right? And have that side by side bit up and running and ready to go. This is going to bring a couple of meaningful impacts to the way people might interact with PowerShell today. One of the biggest ones is probably going to be authentication. I don't know if you've ever used the Azure CLI, the cross-platform kind of Python, yep, and Node command sets. So the way those work is, when you go to authenticate, those use device logins. So you end up at microsoft.com/device login. You get a code, you pump that code in from your session, and then, that authenticates your session and pushes you in. So that's kind of one of the core ways to, or primary ways to go ahead and authenticate when you're using the AZ commandlet set. So it should be kind of well known to, those that have come out of just the cross-platform CLI as it exists today. They are going to be adding support for PS Credential. Doesn't exist today. Well, it exists. It's just disabled and not ready to go. But if you think about it, that's not the best way to do automated scripts anyway, because you've got to go out and hard code credentials and, do your secure strings for your passwords and all those kinds of things. So you can do it, but it can be a little bit hacky. They are also going to add back in the interactive login prompt at some point. if they hit their release in mid-January for that, that'll go ahead and come out and be ready to go as well.
Mover is a cloud migration company that specializes in moving your company's files from file servers or cloud storage like Box, Dropbox, and Google into Office 365. Their patented technology makes Mover the fastest OneDrive file migrator in the world. Moving dozens of terabytes of data a day is a breeze. Use Mover's free, industry-leading migration guides or ask for a managed migration and they'll take the lead. With Mover, all your data is secure and intact. Running completely behind the scenes, you don't lose time, money, or hair while you transfer. Scan, plan, migrate, report. Migrations that don't suck with Mover. Visit mover.io for more info.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Since you're an identity guy, and I have never looked into this, is what's the advantage of having all those different login methods? Like for me, I actually like the device login. I think that's pretty simple, clean, easy. Like you said, the Azure CLI uses it, Office CLI uses it. But what's the advantage to logging in or adding in those other authentication methods as well, as opposed to just keeping it with the device login?
Well, the device login and the, in effect, the kind of web login form, they're doing the same thing, right?
Yep.
You're getting an authenticated session and you get that kind of token pass back and you're ready to go.
Right.
One of the more interesting things that's out there is you can also do service principal authentication. So if you have an app registration in Azure AD, so you've got kind of client token and secret, things like that,
yep,
you can also authenticate all your PowerShell that way.
Right, because I've done that with PNP before.
Yep.
Like using the PNP stuff, if you have MFA enabled for everybody and you don't want to have a user excluded with MFA, I just use that app ID in secret. And I get having those different ones, I guess, like having all the different login prompts for different ways to enter a username and password. I'm like, why not just stick with one?
Well, some of it's...
All of them? I don't know. Me speculating.
Yeah. Some of it's probably just the way this stuff gets built, right? Like device login works today and it's available in CLI. And when they started developing AEZ, you know, having support for PS credential wasn't ready to go on day one. So how do we get around that and still give you a semi-interactive login experience? Well, we support device
just
login.
Do device login.
And go ahead and push it up. And now once you support device login, even once PS credential comes back, you still got to support it, right? Because that's the way you pushed it out and it was sitting out there. So, you know, it's kind of six of one, half dozen of the other. But long story short, you can authenticate any way that you want with these, or you will be able to in the very near future. So anybody who goes out and is interested in AZ, you know, you might want to play around with it in Cloud Shell or do the side-by-side installation. I would not be uninstalling all your Azure RM commandlets today. So there's a roadmap here, but there's definitely some stuff that is missing. The biggest thing that I think everybody needs to pay attention to, and it kind of got lost in the announcement, I think, a little bit, because, you know, they talk about new features and migration and, you know, rah-rah, here's how to get your stuff over. What you really need to be aware of is the release cadence for features and updates within the PowerShell automation tooling and that whole stack. So Azure RM, it gets regular updates. So as the REST APIs are updated on the back end by kind of the teams that own REST APIs and API interactions with ARM and that control plane, then those additions and bug fixes and everything else are made to Azure RM. They get pushed out to GitHub and then, you know, they get pushed as a release down to customers. Now that there's two PowerShell modules, AZ and Azure RM, they're not going to make any more updates to Azure RM. So any new API interactions or control plane interactions are going to be going into the AZ commandlet set. So if you're using a service and you rely heavily on Azure PowerShell to automate it, you're really going to have to pay attention to things like service updates now and Azure service updates and understand where that stuff is going to come through and which set of commandlets it's going to come through in. So they announced this on December 18th. So it's December 21st today, right?
Yep.
So we're only 3 days later. And when they announced version 1.0 on December 18th, I think it was yesterday on the 20th. If you follow the Azure Service Updates RSS feed, or you go check that page, which you should be doing, there is a post where the API management team, the team that owns Azure API management, they actually put a service update out and said, we're all in on the AZ commandlet set, and we will have no more releases of new functionality ever in Azure RM. So now if you want the newer interactions, you're going to have to get on board with AZ no matter what. And that's going to be a slow trickle because there's hundreds of services, right? There's a bunch of stuff going on out there. But as these teams start to figure out where they want to go with the commandlet set, they'll go ahead and get there. So you have to watch service updates. You should absolutely be aware that this change is coming. You should absolutely get on board with this change because it's not only coming, it's going to stick and it's going to be here. I'll make sure to put a post in the show notes too about things for how to think about migrating. And, you know, there's some commandlets where you can actually go into the AZ commandlets and enable and disable Azure RM alias. So you can see what's going to break and what's not going to break with your existing automation along the way. What else for this one? AZ is not supported or it's not loaded into Azure Automation yet. So for like you or for anybody who's maybe doing like stop, start, run books or things like that, keep using Azure RM until the Azure Automation team adds AZ in. That's on the roadmap and should be coming out at some point as well. They've just got some .NET framework dependencies there. So Azure Automation team will be updating from .NET Framework 4.6.1 to 4.7.2. Once they do that, then Windows PowerShell can go ahead and run and you'll be all set.
Got it. Interesting.
But that's not coming till March. So
a little bit of a delay
in that one. So it's going to be a little bit weird here. I don't want to say it's going to be like a bumpy start because they've been very forward and everything's documented. It's out on GitHub. It's out on Docs. It is on the blogs. You just as a consumer of the technologies need to go out and kind of read about all this stuff and see where it impacts you.
Right. Well, it's kind of like a lot of stuff they do. I mean, you look at even PowerShell with PowerShell Core versus PowerShell 5.1 and the path they've taken with that in terms of 5.1 isn't getting updated, but there's still a ton of people that use it. There's still people I run into that use the ISE that don't use Visual Studio Code. As they go through some of these transitions, they do end up supporting two different technologies, both the old and the new, for a long time because of, one, the massive size of their customer base and just the time it takes to sometimes implement the new stuff. It takes for people to get off the old stuff. I mean, how long have we had MSOL and Azure AD hanging around now?
Well, that's because there's two different teams that own that one. So good luck to you there.
I have lots of dreams and hopes and wishes. I have a dream, and they just continue to be dreams. Anyways, more Azure news, and this one is both Azure related, and this one is also going to affect you Office 365 people. Or it could affect Office 365 people and Azure people, is that Azure AD, they're updating their IP addresses for the Azure AD service endpoints here less than a month now, like 3 weeks from now. These IP addresses are getting changed. They already have the new endpoint ranges for what those are going to be. And this is something I warn every customer about, everybody I talk to, and I'm trying to think if I have any customers that have actually locked stuff down by IP ranges, but Microsoft publishes all these IP ranges. They say, hey, these services run on these IP addresses. However, these are all very much subject to change, so keep an eye on it. This is one case where there is a service, and a rather large one, because it is Azure AD and controls all that authentication, where that IP address range is going to change. And we did not get a lot of heads up on it. I mean, this article came out yesterday on the 20th of December, and they're changing them all on January 15. So if you are locking stuff down by IP address, go make sure that you have everything in place for this Azure AD IP address endpoint change here on January 15.
Yeah, so one thing I'll throw out there is Microsoft used to publish an RSS feed of all the IP ranges, and they still do push out a JSON file as well, you know, if you know the place to go ahead and get it. But what they've moved on to, and really where they want customers to be, is rather than maybe updating your firewall based on an RSS feed or doing it manually, they actually have a web service that you can call. So they have a set of endpoints, RESTful endpoints that you can interact with to pull down the IP ranges in CSV format or JSON to get all that stuff dynamically. And that is the version of the truth, 100% up to date, always ready to go. So if you are doing IP whitelisting or blacklisting based on these IP ranges, then you should really be finding a way to automate that. Like, you don't want to be catching up with service update and manually update something and miss it along the way. You know, most modern firewalls are going to have mechanisms in there where they allow you to interact with them programmatically to make that happen.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, especially something like this. Like, I know I got way behind on blog posts. I got a cold. The holidays coming up. Something like this could be very easy to miss. So if you're doing it all programmatically, automatically, you're not going to have to worry, like you said, about catching every single message that they put out and catching it in time to make the change before your users all start screaming at you.
Yeah, automate all the things.
Yes, always automate with PowerShell.
When it comes to email, Outlook and Office 365 are fantastic. But sometimes there are things you'd like to do that aren't implemented. Sperry Software creates Outlook add-ins and Office 365 services that fill in these gaps. For instance, there are Outlook add-ins to automatically print emails and/or attachments, save emails to PDF, send out recurring emails, or how about a warning when you're going to do a reply to all instead of a normal reply? Find these and many more email productivity solutions. Get started today by visiting www.sperrysoftware.com/cloudIT.
What else? Azure Backup. Do you want to talk more about Azure Backup and SQL, or do you want me to talk about Office 365 stuff now?
Oh, we can keep going with
Azure. Let's keep
going
with Azure. We'll go with Azure today. We'll come back and do Office 365 next week.
I'm going to turn you into an Azure guy someday. It'll be okay.
No, I refuse.
Yes.
I have my anti-Azure. No. I like Azure.
One of the interesting things that is happening over in Azure land is Microsoft is finding more ways to introduce PaaS constructs for IaaS resources. So what I mean by that is you might have native functionality inside of something like a virtual machine. You install an application on top of it, like Exchange or SharePoint, or, you know, you deploy a domain controller, whatever it happens to be.
Yep.
One of the other big ones that people do lots of in Azure, because the PaaS services for data don't always have 100% feature compatibility, is they run workloads like SQL Server, and they run SQL Server on top of a VM. And when you're running VMs, you know, we all have seen the slide for pizza as a service, right, where you've got to manage OS updates and patching and all those kinds of things for your virtual machines. Well, you've also got to manage the application that lives on it. And how do you do that? Well, we go in and we create backup plans, and, you know, do we do full backups? Do we do tran logs? How do we do that? What's the cadence? Did I attach an extra drive? Am I running a single instance? Am I running in always on availability groups? Like, you know how to do that stuff on-prem, and it doesn't change when you go to infrastructure as a service. But if you've ever had to do that stuff and do it at scale, it is a royal pain in the rear end, right? To make sure those packages are deployed, everything's up to date. What's going on with my databases? What if somebody adds a new database? Like, you're in SharePoint land and somebody goes and creates a new content database on-prem SharePoint installation. Well, did they add it to the backup plan? I don't know. Well, let's go check the backup plans and figure that stuff out. So that can be a little bit weird along the way and a little bit rough to get into. So what Microsoft has been doing is they've been taking services like Azure Backup, and they've extended ARM to have some new functionality where it can reach through the virtual machine agents directly into your VMs and understand workloads like SQL that are running on there. So you can use some of that stuff maybe to do SQL deployments a little bit cleaner. But they've also extended it out, and they've given the backup service hooks into SQL Server on IaaS VMs. So now you can deploy a recovery vault, and within that vault, you can go ahead and configure SQL Server backup policies. And now you're 100% within the vault at this point. You haven't touched the SQL Server. You haven't gone onto it. You have not created a backup plan. You're doing all of this through a programmatic interface, well, through something like the Azure portal, which is then going to talk through an interface back to your virtual machine. The cool thing about this is, because it's running in something like the backup service, is it can do things like detect new databases. It understands single instance versus always on availability groups, and it can just go ahead and wire all that stuff up for you. The other advantage of this is now your databases don't need to be backed up to storage that's attached to your VM. So it's automatically moved out. So you don't have the, you know, the cost of saying, well, let me go ahead and spin up a disk and go ahead and back up to disk and then maybe back that up to the backup service, right? Because we always want kind of multiple copies of these things sitting around. It's all just tied into the PaaS service. So this was kind of announced as a preview earlier in the year. And now it's out, ready to go, and kicking around. So effectively what you've done is you've gone from backup that you have to manage to backup that can be managed within the Azure backup service using native SQL Server functionality, right? So, and it's not just backup because you have to restore as well. So you can actually initiate those restores from your backup vaults, which is super cool. Like if anybody's never seen this, they should go out and like watch a video on it because it is super slick the way that Microsoft kind of put it together and ran it all up.
Yeah, I was looking at this article and I missed all of these announcements because, like you said, I'm an Office 365 guy. Yeah, but this is cool how you can just stand up that SQL Server. And I guess I think to something because I like SharePoint, a SharePoint guy, where that SQL Server for SharePoint within central admin, within your SharePoint interface, you can add additional content databases. So your SQL DBA doesn't even always know when or if a new content database may have been added to your SharePoint server. And now this can automatically pick it up. It backs it right up to that Azure backup service. There's nothing you need to worry about. You don't have any maintenance plans to configure anymore. You don't have to go in and select those new databases to start getting backed up. It just does it all automatically. It does look like, though, it has to be a SQL Server in an Azure VM, that there's something special going on there where you can't use like a gateway or something like that to leverage this functionality with on-premises SQL Server?
Yeah, so the way it's running right now, and I'll see if I can dig up the blog post or the articles on it, but they have some new functionality that they're building out in ARM. So they actually have a new resource provider just for SQL Server IaaS VMs that are running within ARM. And that's what they're kind of using to talk back and forth and do some of the orchestration. So that stuff doesn't exist on premises today. Who knows? You know, they could be maybe look where AWS and some other folks or like VMware have gone with their management and try and extend that stuff. But for now, it's got to be an Azure VM. If you are, you know, running on-prem VMs, there's other stuff that you can do there to kind of simplify your control plane. Maybe you just do backup straight to blob storage or something like this. The nice thing about this is it's not only just going to blob storage, you're getting the orchestration within the recovery services vault as well and can get all that stuff wired in where it needs to be. So really the reason it needs to be in Azure, you can think about it as there's kind of a management plane or a control plane or endpoint that the VMs actually need to be able to reach out to. And then that endpoint is what the backup service is talking to as well to kind of orchestrate and get all that stuff to where it needs
to
be.
Nice. Yeah, definitely go check this out if you have any SQL servers sitting out there in Azure.
Yeah, it is super slick. And like I said, if you're doing SQL servers today and you're managing backup plans, like it's a compelling use case to go over there because you're probably, like if you're in a production environment or running at any kind of scale, you've probably got recovery services vaults up and running. Or if you're doing things like backing up to blob storage, you know, you can potentially cut that out and just go straight to the backup service as well, depending on your needs and where you're sitting.
Got it. All right. Nice. So final bit of news is I get to go ask an Azure architect a question. I see this link here And it says, ask an Azure architect. What should I ask them?
So, you know, we talk a lot about things that kind of come out of product groups and marketing, whether it's on the Azure side, the Office 365 side, AWS, Google, things like that. It's not often that you get access to maybe just straight through the back end as a normal person. So one of the things that I saw on the Azure subreddit, rather, there's a couple of CSAs. So those are cloud solution architects. It's a role at Microsoft. They got together and they opened a new Slack workspace where they want to just have a forum for informal conversation. They'll drop suggestions, tips, tricks, blogs, things like that, 100% related to Azure and not kind of official Microsoft stuff, right? I just want to be clear, like this is a couple of CSAs who are just doing this on their own, nothing like officially sanctioned here, not a marketing effort, anything like that, 100% community. But it's just going to be a decent chunk of folks that work at Microsoft who are out there and want to help people out of the kindness of their hearts for the holidays. I think that's always a nice thing. So they're going to be doing all this inside of Slack. And so if anybody's looking for another Slack team that they can go ahead and join, we will have the link in the show notes. It's just aka.ms/join-ask-azure, and you can go ahead and run it up in there.
All right. I think the best part about this thread on Azure is that half the comments underneath the initial post are why they're doing it in Slack and not Teams. That could be a whole nother podcast.
Yes. For anyone that has ever had to work with multiple tenants in Teams, you will understand why they're doing it in Slack.
Yes. And to be fair, I know they are working on improving the whole multiple Teams thing. That will definitely be a later podcast because I think it's still very early stages. There's some user voice stuff out there. But yes, go check out that Slack channel if you want to ask an Azure architect something. And you know what else, Scott? There's a new Yammer web part for SharePoint.
It made it in. Thank you.
I just had to make sure we got that in since we mentioned it. And now that you know that, I can let you go. We can talk about it more next week. I just wanted to give you something to look forward to.
Excellent. I very much appreciate that.
Hey, I am here for you, Scott.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
Well, go enjoy your Christmas, and we will talk to you again soon.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.